David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and this is Stacy from The Advisor. Today, I'm very excited because we have a very special guest. We have a professor of literature on the show today, and she is a published author. She has published 3 books, and today she's here to discuss a very special book that she's written. It's a children's book, and it's also made for teens, tweens, and adults. And I read the book, and I have to tell you, it was amazing. I enjoyed it, and I just loved it. But the person who I want you to speak to, who's going to tell you a little about the book and about how she came about creating the book, is going to be Marjorie. So Marjorie, tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do.
Starting with my childhood or right now, what do you want?
You can start wherever you like.
All right. Born in Portland, Oregon, the youngest of 3 or 4, if you count the family dog, and he really was almost like an older brother. And I grew up with a family that was very together. You know, it seems popular today, if you're going to be interviewed, you have to have some horror you've overcome. Well, we all have adversity, and I've had adversity and deaths, but basically, it's been a pretty blessed life, which is partly there because I feel that way about it.
Right.
I think people can look at lives as oh, woe is me. It's so hard to be a mother these days. I had 4 children, and there they were, so you rear them.
Yeah.
Let me talk then about the book that got us together. It's called The New Cadets, and the publishing house is the Gabbro Head Press, which is the www.gabbrohead.com. This book I started for my oldest grandson, who's now going on 24 and a big, tall fellow, 6'4". And he was having night terrors when he was little, 5 or 6. And I bought him a stuffed yellow toy Labrador dog and said it was a guide dog, service dog, that it would be there in dreams with him. And he did say he saw the dog, Oliver. He named the dog Oliver. And that's the first character you meet in the book. It went on from that. I started writing a story about how these dogs are recruited from toy stores and then taken off to a special place, which is kind of magical. Maybe very magical, but magical in a way that many stories aren't. There's no wand waving or spell casting. There are such things as, and this was great fun to write about, the variable sea. It's an ocean, a sea, but every 12 hours and 25 minutes, it shifts. Right. Maybe not much, but it might even be a pond, but it's usually a large lake or usually a sea. You have to be careful. You don't want to be way out in a rowboat in the ocean. Stacy can tell you why she said, I'm saying that right now. She was once swept out to sea in a rowboat as a girl. All of those things. So, and there's a valley below where the school is, where the dogs are in training. Humans can't make their way down there. It's a descent. The stream that goes by the academy goes down to the lower valley. Humans just can't do it. They start down and they break out into a cold sweat and they leave. But the dogs, who have taken on the ability to move, they have, let's say, flesh now, they can go down there. And in that valley are moods, mood elements. And the first dog that goes down there finds himself laughing and happy at one moment and then irritable and grouchy or angry. And these moods will occasionally rise up and you get a mood storm in the upper valley where all the people are saying, you know, I've just loved you for, you've been so good to me. It's a maudlin mood.
Yeah.
Or one where they're sour with each other or terribly sad. And that was fun to write about emotions, which is something in your podcast. I see that the whole yeah. idea of emotion shows up. So it's magic of a sort, but it's more like living in this world where we don't have oceans that change, but we do have seasons. We can't wave a wand and change things.
Right.
We have to learn to live with whatever it is that we're given.
Yeah.
And that's a great deal of fun. It was also a sheer delight to write about the moment when they're going through a tunnel on a train and the toy dogs are there. Those nine, well, eight at the start that have been recruited, and they take on flesh. They start moving, they start breathing. And I didn't know what fun that would be, but
yeah,
all of a sudden, you know, one's looking at the other and one of them is particularly scared.
Yeah.
And now they have to go and they have to learn about eating. That comes fairly easily. It's sort of innate with dogs, but
right.
they also have to be trained in using the toilets. I do that delicately enough, I want you to know, but yeah, it makes me think about having a body and having a spirit, and that the body, whether it's a stuffed toy dog or living flesh dog or human body, it's housing for a spirit.
Right.
And our spirits are, if we have good luck, we've got healthy ones and we do all we can to keep them healthy.
Yeah. Very true. I loved how you were so detailed in your writing, and that you could actually, as you were writing, you read in the book, it kind of, you could just imagine it in your head. It just, you gave such a defined and clear message and everything flowed so beautifully. And I loved how you were able to actually just not just read it, but you could imagine it as you were going along. And I'd love the descriptionist, you know, the descriptions, how you were so perfectly detailed in how you described the story. And I loved it. Was this something that you've always wanted to do, or is just your grandson, his experience was really what sparked it? Did you always have a love for children's books, and maybe that kind of put a spark to it and a reason to actually pick up the pen and start writing away?
Absolutely. My dissertation at Berkeley was on 19th century fantasy, British, not American, British fantasy, and wonderful, wonderful stories. And C.S. Lewis and Tolkien were born in that era, but yeah. They did their main writing in the last century, not one century back. And yes, I always sort of wrote stories in my head when I was falling asleep, wonderful stories like that. When I was a girl, this is embarrassing, the police had hired some of us children to go riding horses around Portland, Oregon at night and, and rein in criminals. Can you imagine how well that would work? I never got that far in the daydream because I'd fall asleep, but I'd start maybe another night thinking, oh yes, we've been chosen. We sneak out of our houses and we ride horses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I kind of like that.
Yeah, and right. It just seems ridiculous when you get older, but wonderful stuff. And I've always liked children's literature and wrote what I like to read. C.S. Lewis said that he wrote the books he liked to read. And it's the same for me. I'm a careful writer. I think you are too, Stacy, reading your writing. It's very good writing.
Oh, thank you.
And for me, I do a lot of rewriting, but one of the things in rewriting is it can make things stiff if you're not doing it the right way, or it can make it flow better.
Yeah.
I used to say to my writing students that a good essay, a good piece of writing should be like a dance.
Yeah.
The dancer has rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed. And when the dance happens, it looks flawless and so smooth and effortless.
Yeah.
And so your writing moves that way. It's very, very nice. And that's what I try for in my writing too. So by the time you're done, it looks like it was nothing. I just put the pen down or fingers on the computer and out it came. It's really not that simple.
Right.
And I started this book in my 60s. I'm now in my 80s. But I didn't go at it all the time. I was working, teaching at university, and I'm doing other things. hiking, exploring, and all.
Yeah.
So it would get written mostly during holidays. And then now retired, I finally said, time to get serious. Keep going. And I had written 2 volumes of the book. And the publisher said, break it, first volume and the second volume, into 2. So the first book is half of the first volume. And the second book is ready to go, except for proofreading. My, it's easy to leave a mistake.
Oh, yeah.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
You think you've got them all. Your friends have looked at it, and then something terribly embarrassing shows up.
Not even that big, but you tend to, the more you read it, the little, you know, minute little things you pick up on. And probably most people wouldn't even pick up on those things, but us as the writer, we pick up on those things. But it's very easy to slip by, you know. You could have a book proofread over 10, 15 times, and you might still come up with a little error here or there. It's just natural as a writer.
But you don't want them.
No, you don't want them, no.
Each one is a mortification for me. I have a dachshund that was referred to 3 times in book 1 as a wiener dog. In one place, I spelled it wiener dog. That was not in the final publication, but barely, barely made it. And I have friends, one who teaches German, and any German speaker would probably catch that. And still, it slipped by.
Very easy.
Go ahead. Sorry, what were you saying?
No, I said it's very easy for that to happen.
It is. Yet I'm still very careful. I have some music in the book and had a friend write, well, they're songs. And there's a benediction and a school song, which was fun to write because, you know, you have to do all the air, this and that, we who, like my grand high school, grand noble generals, all that. Fun to imitate that. But she wrote music, composed music.
Oh, that's so nice. Book,
another friend that I've known all my life has written the music. So that's the end of the book. You can look at it or not. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it's fun to have friends throw their bit in. Really fun.
I liked how it was to be continued at the end. You kind of left it as a little cliffhanger, which I thought was very cool. And do you think that a lot of the experiences in life, you know, you being so active and doing so many things, do you think a lot of your experiences kind of went into the book also, or had played an impact?
They certainly did. I think it's in book 3 that one of the dogs goes out on the variable sea, when it's an actual sea, in a kayak, one that you pedal. They do have them. But I had to figure out how a dog could handle it. They can't handle all of those things. And he goes through some caves out in the ocean that are cut through the cliffs. And that's from my own experience. There's a wonderful, wonderful place. I don't even think I want to say it because it'd be dangerous for people to go out there. Where you can go through like a headland on the Pacific Ocean. And there's caves that go through that. And it doesn't get fully dark because 2 or 3 places, there's a hole up in the wall where in the right time of day, sun comes in. And I put the dog through that. And every time I reread it, I'm just back there in that magical, magical tunnel.
Yeah.
But the friend who showed it to me, the strongest man I've ever known, he's originally German.
Yeah.
Said he went there by himself once, and waves came in from both ends, and he was right where he was going to get smashed in the roof. So he rolled over and let the bottom of his boat hit the ceiling.
Yeah,
his kayak back up and went out. I wouldn't recommend it. It was not a light thing, but I went through with him at the right tide.
Yeah, yeah.
with the right time of day with the light coming in. So that's just one experience. But climbing or hiking or going through caves, not on the ocean, but other places too. Yeah, it's there in all sorts of ways. It's not as though I made a list and said, this is going to be in, this is going to be in, this is going to be in. It just emerged, it flowed, yeah. It grew. And I remember Tolkien saying that, did he have it all outlined? He did not. For him too, it was organic and he got stuck. You know, yeah. What's going to happen now? Well, where do I go? It's not, you have a general idea of where you're heading.
Yeah.
It's not just blank, but it takes over itself and characters. You've probably heard this said before, that a character will take over and say, no, I wouldn't do that. That's yeah. not like me. I'm going to do this instead. Do you, exactly. do you write any fiction?
I had some really great ideas that I put together, but I never like went through and wrote it. I always wanted to, like I wrote notes and I wrote in diaries and stuff like that. And I had such great ideas. And it was funny because later on in life, a couple of people came out and published some fiction books, just like the ones that like the dreams and the ideas that I was having that I was writing down. People had written fiction books about it. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. And I was like, you know, I should have just, you know, just did it. I always wrote nonfiction, but I would like to do a fiction book, you know, actually really get really deep, dive deep into it and do something like that. Cause I have such a vivid imagination. I just haven't ever penned it down on paper.
Well, it's not too late.
No.
I got writing this in my 60s. So it's about 18, 19 years that I started at it. So when you mature enough.
Yeah.
and there is a nice thing about being older. Many things don't bother you. Criticism doesn't bother you so much. You sort of know human nature.
Yeah.
You're getting that in the, you know, 30s, 40s. You're getting it all along. It's not going to pop into your understanding at yeah. 60. But it's all useful.
Yeah.
It's very, very useful.
It's so true. Now, with your character, Oliver was the dog. So was there a reason why you gave him the personality he had, or was it something that you just created in your head, or was he amplifying something, you know, and maybe another character in real life that you were trying to copy in a sense?
Not with Oliver, but when I've thought about him, he fits a certain, I don't know whether to call it technique, gimmick, something that writers do. They often have the main character, especially if that person's character is a narrator, be a little bit retreating, not the flashiest, not out there making all the trouble, and they're observing often. And I think he has some of that. He's kind of an extra decent dog. When you're learning to use the toilet, the boys in the boys' toilet with an older dog showing them. The girls say that, rumors have it, that the boys have an inch mark, well, or a measurement mark up the side of one urinal, and they have high water contests, as they call it, lift their leg the highest. And Oliver doesn't join in, but I wrote about him. He didn't judge that sort of thing harshly. He was just one to hold back, and he laughs too when the dachshund knows he can't enter this contest. He doesn't stand a chance. But, there is a woman, Annie the cook. She is very much a cousin of mine, really a cousin's cousin. She had a catering business. We didn't have shared blood, but we shared cousin. And she was a wonderful woman, very heavy, very big, very outspoken. And she's the cook in the school.
Oh, wow.
And she's just I just know how her voice is going to be, what word she's going to use.
Right.
She's brought back. She's deceased. She's brought back into life. And
I like
she
that.
It's really fun. I have her there.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. I love that. Now, when you were writing this book, was there a certain message you were trying to get across? You know, and even though it's fiction, was there something you were trying to teach others when you were writing this book, or was it just for enjoyment and just to let your imagination flow?
Didn't have any plan to make any point, any moral.
Yeah.
But the morals are there. What I think, what I believe is right and good is there. And it's easy with dogs because they are essentially good.
Yeah, they
and
are.
And they try to do the right thing, though it'll happen in the next book that two of the dogs get into a very shameful dog fight. It's terrible. And everybody's horrified and shocked.
Right.
So these dogs are, like any of us, imperfect. They have to pick up and go on.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're going to get booted out of the academy, but you'll find out.
I love it. I love it. So you were, you've been writing pretty much your whole life. You've had a love for literature your entire life. And this is really right. You filling out one of your goals, one of the things, and you know, things on your bucket list you always wanted to do. You started it out a while back and, you know, you just wanted to, you know, finish it. And it seems like you've done a marvelous job. You know, I love the book. I thought it was immaculate. I thought it was a great book. And for anyone who likes, you know, surprise and likes a book that's really detailed where you can imagine things and, you know, you can go away into another world. Cause those are the books that I like the best is when you read and you can kind of go, you know, go away for a while and just like, it takes you away, you know?
Well, it's a delight to write on it. I enjoy doing so.
Yeah. So have you always had a passion for imagination? Now you told me you took some classes, you know, back in the day, or you taught classes for.
I taught classes. I've never taken a writing class and never had an urge to do so.
Okay.
It probably can be extremely useful, especially to get yourself going. But I haven't trained in writing. I just written a lot. And you're writing your nonfiction. That makes a huge difference if you write fiction. You've already known how to make a sentence dance and throw away a word that maybe says exactly what you want to say, but it's an ugly sounding word, like pulchritudinous means beautiful. Why
right.
would you say someone was pulchritudinous? They'd slap you. You know, so you pick, I also pick words where the end of the sentence has the right rhythm. So the sentence wouldn't go da 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 da. That's too chopped off. It would have to go da 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 da, or a variety of things. But my ear is hearing, and reading your writing, I think it's going on for you too. That awareness of how a sentence dances.
Yeah.
It's part of it, not just the plot, not just the message. Not just the words, but the bounce,
right,
and the whirl, the dance.
I love how you did put some challenging words in your book, even though you made it for all age groups. You know, you made it for, like, you know, for tweens, teens, and for adults. But you know, for the tweens and the teens, you did put a few challenging words in there, and not too hard, but, you know, just to give a little bit of a niche, just to make the kids really think, you know.
I'm coming from an older tradition, even the Oz books. I went through that because I had a literary agent who didn't end up getting this book to a publisher. Still have him. But his wife was in elementary teaching for children reading, and she said, shouldn't have big words. So I started doing my own research. The Oz books are mostly, like I write, easy words, but there's an occasional solid word.
Yeah.
That's how you learn words,
right?
When you're a kid, you don't necessarily know how to pronounce them, but you pick them up. And
right.
The same goes for say The Hobbit. And mm-hmm. I've got one of my books is on J.R. Tolkien, and I know him well. Is writing well, and met his son, who's deceased now. But Tolkien's books, even those written specifically for children, they are not going to hold back on the occasional more difficult multiple syllabic word. And the same with C.S. Lewis, same with a whole lot of the Victorian writers that I talked about in my dissertation. So I certainly am not trying to impress people with big words, but now and then a fairly big word is just the right word, and go ahead and use it.
When you were writing the book, So did you anticipate that it was going to be four series, or you just kept writing and it
just kept writing? And then I thought, I better get this published or try to.
Yeah.
And it's a lot harder. In some ways, the real fun is in the writing.
Yeah. It's that very true. It's very true. Now, if you wanted to like take away like, and kind of put together like some of the messages in the book that you really wanted to get across, you know, because you really, it was a dog who could communicate with a person, and it, you know, and it helped that person, you know. So was there certain messages that you really wanted to try to get across that could help people, even though it's a fiction book? You kind of wanted to maybe, you know, entertain, but yet maybe teach them a few things too along the way.
Yes and no, because I didn't list points I wanted people to go away with, but they emerged and I then recognized them. One thing, I wanted to tell a story that's there, and I wanted to have experiences show up that I liked as a kid and as an adult. Wanted some magic, slight magic. But I began to see that ideas of loyalty and determination, curiosity, humor. I don't know if humor is quite what you're looking for, but forgiveness of yourself, and awareness of what's important in life.
Yeah.
In this world of partial magic, there's a scene coming up where the dogs will go over a hill to the farm that's on this in this valley that's where the school is. Excuse me. And the older dogs guiding them take them down to the pond. They said they're tadpoles, or turning, they're frogs now, but they were tadpoles. And the dogs are so amazed by that. And they come back the next spring and they're so amazed. And then I'm thinking, I want the reader to realize how absolutely magical this world is here. And tadpole eggs that grow a head and a tail and pop out legs and then eat up their tail. It's so full of magic all around us.
Yeah.
So you want, I think, was it Tolkien or Lewis? C.S. Lewis talked about, you want to know the importance of things like stone and bread and water.
Yeah.
Those should come across as magical as well as anything else.
I think that's amazing, because it's kind of, you've tapped into a couple of genes, you know, like it's nice, because it's, you know, it's not just your ordinary children's book. There's a lot of different things that you kind of tap into and really make the imagination roll, you know. And
right.
I think that's what makes it so interesting too. It's not just a plain children's story. You fill it with a lot of different things, morals and magic and principles and just different ways of just using the, you know, using the imagination and making, you know, being able to just drift off into another world, and all these different things can happen, you know. And but yet you made it also related to the earth world, you know, so it, you
it
know,
is.
Even though it's, yeah, so it's like it has a lot of different, you know, different things all wrapped up into one, it seems.
And only certain people can talk to toys when they're recruited. Very special people can go and talk to a toy, and they're always surprised. Most of them have never run into a human being who can speak with them. So
yeah,
when I take the toys, well, they take on flesh. When they go back through the tunnel, they're toys again.
Yeah.
And I get, some of the adventures are happening outside in the later books. One of the dogs that was recruited, a German Shepherd, handsome, smart, willing to join in, he's stolen by people who have a sense something's going on. They don't know quite what it is that's happening. And so you follow his story. It was they search for him. And some of the dogs, some of the ones who've trained to be dream rangers, they finish school, are helping. So they go out and they're toys. They're just stuffed toys. And to describe them and their conversations with the humans, it's great. It was fun. It's fun to do that. And how do they entertain themselves?
Right.
one, my publisher thought at one point that these dogs want to be real dogs. And I said, this is not Pinocchio. Who wants to be a real boy? These dogs are perfectly happy being personal toys. It's a career they've always thought they'd have. And then once they get trained in how to work in dreams, they go back. They get hired out, so to speak, as personal toys. And this is the culmination of their career. So they don't want to, they're happy when they go back and they can't move because a lot of things are easier.
Yeah.
You don't get hungry. You don't have to go to the bathroom. You don't have an itch. And I try to make that point. They're completely happy as toys, but they do like the being inside the world where they can run around too. It's not something they scored.
Yeah. It's nice because you also learn a little bit about gratitude too. And it also seems like it's kind of refreshing too, to be able for a child to be able to go to sleep at night and think that people in my dreams, the animals, and they could become real, you know, or they are real when I close my eyes.
Sebastian said he saw Oliver. Sebastian, my grandson, that the original Oliver was bought for.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
We still have that dog. My daughter has him. Toy store where he was bought, Doug and Melissa Toy, if you happen to know those toys. Very nice toy company. He was one of those. And the toy store still exists under a new name in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, how nice.
Which is fun.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So where can people find this book?
It's the Gabbro Head. I have a copy of it, right? Come on, by GPS. Here's the book. The pastels made me think, yes, ever since Barbie came out, pastels are big, aren't they?
I have mine, too.
There you go, two of them together. The Gabbro Head is spelled G-A-B-B-R-O, new word, head. It's a rock in the Midwest. And it's the Gabbro Head Press, or www.gabbrohead.com. And it's out now. You can order it now.
It's supposed to
hit the market on the 15th, but people are ordering it now.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. And I assume it's going to be available on probably Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, and all of them.
I think so. I just got an email from a distributor who had three reviews I'd never seen before. They were just lovely. Nice as yours. And I don't know much about this. Previously, I wrote a book. It was accepted. It got printed. I got to proofread a final time. Out it went. And now there's this publicity publicist. I'm learning about a distributor. You know, I've been an ignorant fool for 83 years. Now I'm learning how the system works. So the distributor was saying they're going to send it out to large bookstores. So they didn't specify which they were.
That's wonderful. And if people wanted to contact you and they wanted to maybe ask you questions or, you know, find out a little bit more about the book, where could they find you?
What does one do? Give out their email, or is that, how do you do that?
What, do you have
the
like
publisher,
any
social, I suppose.
Do you have any social networks that you're on?
I'm really ignorant. That's what I thought. When we first were going to get together, I thought, we've had such different lives. And Stella, I started reading the different headlines or titles of your podcast. I thought, no, we share a lot. But I haven't bothered with it. I never signed up for Facebook because I thought, this will take time away from other things I want to do. And people tell me I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was still rock climbing a lot and kayaking and working and teaching, and I didn't want other things in the way.
That's amazing.
So I'm getting an education now. My youngest son is keeps me pretty much in the 21st century. but I'm not as much there as I could be.
Okay.
There are opportunities to be, but they don't bother. I don't see movies very much. I like them. You get me into one, I love it. But I tend to pick up a book.
I love it. I love it. I think your outlook on life is great. I think it's great that you're so active. You were telling me all the different things that you do and that you're living life and you're enjoying it. And, you know, and you fulfilled one of your dreams, which was to write a children's book. And it not only became a children's book, but it became a series. And it's a beautiful book. And I highly recommend it to others because I thought it was just fabulous. I thought it was fabulous. And I haven't sat down and read a fiction book in a while. And so when I did read it, I really enjoyed myself and it reminded me of how much I do miss my fiction books, you know, because I hadn't read one in a while. But
you're going to write one or two when you get there. When life gives you a little space, you're going to do it, I think.
Yeah, I might. Yeah, you know,
I insist.
I might. I actually might. Definitely. It would be a nice change. It would be fun. It definitely would be fun. I always was told by my children I had a huge imagination. You know, I always used to make up stories when they were little. You know, it was just a fun way of, you know, to get them to do things. I would, you know, my son thought chickens were dinosaurs, you know.
Dinosaurs they're related.
They are, yeah. I also tried to make him believe that they were in the backyard and they came out at night when you were sleeping and things like that.
People ask me what I want to do now with things. And I thought, well, what new thing? And I realized I want to go do some things I haven't for a while, like scuba diving or riding a horse.
Yeah.
But what's entirely new? And I got thinking, I thought I'd like to go on a horse pack ride in the steppes of Central Asia in Mongolia somewhere. Would that be cool?
That Imagine would be very cool.
Going that vast plain, the sky overhead, and the horses and tents put up at night or yurts. Okay, so if somebody asked me what new I'd like to do, that would be great fun.
That would be great fun. That sounds very exciting. I like that. I like that a lot.
We can do it.
Yes, I would love to. I would love to. I love your mentality. You have an amazing mentality. And I just, I love everything about you. And I love what you've done, what you're writing. I love the book. And it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And, you know, if anyone wants to leave any comments or questions for Marjorie, you could leave them in the comment box and I will tell Marjorie and she will get back to you. And thank you so much for being on the show. Is there anything before we go that you'd like to, any messages or anything else that you'd like to share before we go?
Just hope people get out there and do the things they like and don't quit. Just keep doing them.
I think
good luck to all of you, everyone, because luck is part of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Oh, this has been a pleasure, Marjorie. Marjorie, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. And you've been a delight. Truly.
Oh, you have a great day.
Doing what you're doing. You're doing it beautifully.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
I will. You too.